Namaste, good morning, everyone. I think there is a problem with the live stream. So all those who are trying to watch this talk on YouTube are unable to do so. We've tried from multiple locations, but it doesn't seem to be working. And so hopefully this satsang will be put up soon on YouTube, since most of you watch this on YouTube. Guru Purnima had taken place on 13th July, the most auspicious day for the guru principle, the guru-disciple relationship, where it is said that the grace flows the strongest through the guru on this particular day. So it is not just about veneration of the guru, but the fact that to tap into this clear channel of the source of the divine on this day is a matter of perhaps good fortune. Whenever I think of the highest ideal of a guru, it is Ramana Maharshi who comes to mind. And I recently read, I am reading a beautiful book given by someone to me, called Moments Remembered with Bhagwan Ramana. And it reminded me of a couple of incidents. One was, which is not mentioned in this book, someone who gifted a big bar of chocolate to Bhagwan. And he opened the wrapping, took out the foil, etc. And then they saw everyone sitting in the hall, saw that he looked around and started cutting this bar of chocolate into what turned out to be 36 equal pieces. 36 equal pieces, or some number like that. And then each devotee in the hall got one piece, and one piece for Bhagwan himself. This was a known fact in his satsangs, that he did not like special treatment. If someone brought anything for him, he said, why haven't you brought it for the others as well? And so it goes that during his last days on this plane, one day he looked at a cabinet which was on the wall, which was full of medicines neatly arranged, all sorts of medicines, allopathy, Ayurveda, homeopathy, elixirs, herbs, ashes, poisons, various remedial treatments, which the devotees had either brought with them since he was ailing or sent across. These were all lined up in this cabinet. And that day, Bhagwan asked for a jar, an empty jar, big empty jar. And he told the attendant, pull out each bottle one by one, pour it into this empty jar, mix it, and then I will have it. So the audience was aghast, and they asked him, why would you do such a thing? And he said, because my devotees have got this for me out of love, so I will have it. So everyone got very nervous. They called the doctor, and the doctor, upon hearing this, was terrified. He said, this is an absolute no-no. If this happens, it's going to be terrible. But Bhagwan was pretty adamant. So the devotees didn't know what to do. And then they mentioned to Bhagwan, all right, have it if you must. But then all of us will have one spoon as well by your own rule. And that is when Bhagwan relented and said, all right, I won't have it. This is Guru Bhakti, such a beautiful story. Then there was another story of the Jnani Morris Friedman, who Nisargadatta Maharaj said was self-realized. And Morris was with Bhagwan in those days. And one day he got a big glass of fruit juice for Bhagwan. And he said, Bhagwan, I have got this for you. And the Maharshi replied, oh, wonderful, but it's not enough. So Morris said, no problem. You have this, I'll get some more for you. And Bhagwan said, no, I mean, you will need to get a big glass of fruit juice for everyone in the hall. So Maurice replied, they don't need it, you do. And Bhagwan said, why is that? He said, because you are the one looking pale, not them. That's why I've made it for you. And Bhagwan said, is it so? If that is the case, then I insist that you have it, because you are whiter in complexion than me. Now, Maurice went to the corner of the hall and had the glass of fruit juice. Everyone else laughed, but he did that because he took the guru's instruction literally. He was no fool. What was said was said. In the traditional guru-disciple relationships, whatever the guru said was followed by the disciple without questioning as such. We have seen so many cases specifically with reference to Shirdi Sai Baba. One has come across where when this great master told some of his disciples, don't leave now, leave tomorrow or whatever it may be, they didn't listen. No, no, we have work to do, this, that and all. And some calamity befell them. So the point is that if the guru is the aspect of source consciousness functioning, and we still come to the guru principle with our small minds, our little minds, our thinking mind, thinking we know what's best for us, we have short-circuited the relationship. Perhaps because we still view the guru as an individual. In some traditions, I have seen, even in the Sufi tradition, permission is asked. Ijazat hai, do I have your permission to leave now? Not, okay, bye-bye, my time is up, I'm going. Not that the guru is going to say no, stay, but in recognition of this force which knows better than the little me. In fact, in this book, Memories, what is it called? Moments Remembered, sorry. There's another nice story of a man who was so immersed in his devotion to Bhagwan that whenever he would write poetry or verses, etc., and Ramana's name needed to be mentioned, Arunachala, Ramana, Ramana, this, whatever, he could not get himself to write the name because it was too auspicious for him, too overwhelming. He could not speak the name, he could not write the name. So what he would do is, whenever the name was supposed to come, he would put dot, 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 and he would complete the line. And one day, he was in the satsang, and another devotee came and called out to Bhagwan by name. And this man, a spontaneous reaction was, he turned around and slapped that man. Now, the beauty is, that man knew about this issue with this devotee, that he was so overwhelmed by Bhagwan, he could not mention him by name. So instead of reacting back, he was overwhelmed by this man's love and commitment to Bhagwan, that he could not bear another human being mentioning the name too. That was quite beautiful. Perhaps not the right thing to do, etc., etc. But this anecdote was showing a certain aspect of veneration, dedication, devotion, whatever you may call it. Once this young guy came to me, maybe 20, 21 years old, told me something quite funny. This slapping reminded me of this. He was in love with the girl, madly in love, and they had a brief affair, and then she broke up with him. So he was distraught. He was in the dumps, could not do anything, did not want to go anywhere, in total gloom and doom. And the mother got very worried that, what do I do with this child of mine? How do I help him? And she kept telling him, don't worry, there'll be others, this, that. Nothing worked. He was really suffering. Then his brother returned from a trip after 2 days, and the mother said, look, this has happened. And he's in a terrible shape. And the brother said, is it? Don't worry, Ma, I'll take care of it. And he went to his younger brother, This is all being told to me by the younger brother who was narrating this incident. He said, my brother came, as soon as he walked into the bedroom, he came and asked me if what he had heard from my mother was correct. And then he gave me one tight slap. He said, I was shocked. I was stunned and astounded. And then he said that my attention was taken away so swiftly from my problem of this breakup into what my brother did that I snapped out of it. Again, not the right approach. It is a form of violence. But there's an important point here. The point is when focus shifts, when our thinking mind, which is immersed in some form of psychological suffering, when there's a break in that, that suffering is no longer all-consuming. In this unfortunate incident, it required this, but the point should not be missed. It is not about the slap. It is, where is our attention focused? Is it focused on the psychological suffering, the involvement, or is it focused on what is, not what should be, what could be, what should have been, what could have been, but here and now, in this moment? And life slaps us around. Life gives us jolts. Life pulls the carpet from under our feet. This is everyone's experience. It shakes us up and we realize we were lost in this living dream of life. That is why Bhagwan said, if not the first blow and not the second blow, by the time it is the fourth or fifth blow life gives, one wakes up and questions, what is all this about? Which is the start of the journey within. Someone asked a devotee of Bhagwan, what have you learned from him? And the devotee said, what I have learned is from watching him every day. And he summed it up in one very beautiful para, which I'd like to read out. Just watching the master, not even about what he said, his process of self-inquiry and so on. Very simple, very humble, witnessing the actions of the master during the course of the day. After I read this out, if there are any questions or if anyone would like to share anything, they are more than welcome to. So he says, I observed the personal habits of Sri Bhagwan and tried to follow his example. One noticed in Bhagwan's daily life, personal cleanliness, tidiness of dress, habitual wearing of vibhuti and kumkum on the forehead, equal sharing of all enjoyments with those around one, strict adherence to a time schedule, doing useful work however low it be, never leaving a work unfinished, the pursuit of perfection in every action, incessant activity except while sleeping or resting after a spell of hard work, never considering oneself superior to others, speaking the truth always, or strict silence if the expression of a truth would hurt or lower the reputation of others, perfect self-help, never asking another to do a piece of work which can be done by oneself, taking full responsibility for failure, if any, without shifting the blame on others, accepting success and failure with equanimity, never disturbing the peace of another, leaving the leaf or plate clean after eating, complete non-interference in the affairs of others, and never worrying about the future. This point of the pursuit of perfection in every action reminds me of my pursuit of perfection, which I think was inbuilt. And so, especially when it came to reading and then helping Rameshji with the editing of his books, I think what he liked about me was going into all the details of each and every sentence, commas, full stops, this, that, editor says this, what should we do? But unfortunately, this ended up taking a lot of time. And he was not very patient as such. He was very keen and eager to bring the book out. And one day I mentioned to Rameshji that, and this is after he said that, Gautam, you seem to be a perfectionist like me. And I replied, I said, you know, but I feel it is pointless. And he said, why? I said, because 99% of the people who read this will not realize all the trouble we have taken to clean it up. So what is the point of this perfection? And he said, it is not for the 99%. In that case, it is for the 1%. But more importantly, you cannot help being a perfectionist. It is not something you are doing, which in the ultimate understanding is that nobody truly can help being anything except who they are, how an intelligence far greater than yours created them. Hard to digest, especially if you think of the people you don't like in your life. That is why the masters gave various tools and techniques. Some of them, like Sai Baba would say, that when you meet people you like and don't like, replace their form with my image. Because we are so habituated to form. All right, see my face on their face. If I'm not mistaken, the mother of Pondicherry said the same thing. Joel Goldsmith said, don't see the people, see the I, the capital I, over their heads. Or as Rameshji would say, in this path of knowledge, understanding, understand that the same consciousness functions through each and every one. Then what happens is the personal battles we have with individuals reduce. The battles we have with ourselves, when we accept ourselves for the way God made us, our battles reduce with ourselves. And we lay the sword down, as Goldsmith says. With the battle with people, the battle with ourselves, the battle with events that happen in our lives. The why me syndrome comes to an end. The why me, poor me, why did you do this to me? Why did she do this to me? Why did God do this to me? It is truly the end of the why. Rameshji was considered a hardliner when he would reply, why not? Why not? You keep saying why? Why not? And who wants to know? Who wants to know why? A created object wants to know the will of the creator subject, as he would say. I want to know. Who are you? Who wants to know? And when these battles reduce, the thinking mind comes to rest. And then the waking, working, alive mind, free of this churn of thinking in the duration of time, is available for what life brings, is available for the person in front of you. You are more available because the individual me and my story is not functioning. One is available as the presence, as not your presence as an individual, as the presence, which is devoid of individuality as such, which means devoid of judgments and condemnations and expectations and so on and so forth. As Maharaj said, beingness is not your personal asset. It does not belong to me. All right. Let's see if there's anything. I've become a bit rusty with this 3-month gap on Zoom. So I hope I'm doing this right. Yes, Kumar. Just a sec. I can't hear you. So
yeah. Namaste, Gautam sir.
Namaste.
So good to see you again after such time. I had a question. Like when we see
Are you saying that you're happy that you're seeing me after a long time?
No. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
So when we see the photos of saints like Anandmayima or others, you feel this unconditional love. I met you, I felt a very strong unconditional love. And with animals, I feel the same. So is nobody except sages and animals capable of unconditional love? Because With family, it's always you're never enough, and whatever you do, you give your love, but sometimes you again feel that you are running dry because you feel rejected, and sometimes there's verbal or physical abuse despite complying and everything. So how do we overcome this feeling? Because you also want to receive love, like giving, like it's, you know, you get frustrated after time.
But Kuvar, actually, in fact, I'm going to quote Maharaj on this. He says one's natural state, one's natural nature is to give love, and you are not concerned with receiving it, you see. Now, the question is that giving love does not mean going around hugging everyone, telling them how much you love them, and so on and so forth. Giving love is allowing people to be the way they are without any notion of wishing them to be a different way. Is not that true love? Is not that a love so deep, because the me as an individual with its preferences is absent? Now, all right, in a family setup, especially for a child that is growing up, in that sense, the child needs love to be nurtured, to be taken care of, to be appreciated. Fair enough. But when this investigation, when the focus turns within, one will find that even if I feel in my household, in my family, someone is not really expressing their love for me, someone is not making me feel appreciated, and so on and so forth, when it is clearly seen that this person is playing out their script exactly as they are supposed to be, you accept what is. There may still be hurt. We are, after all, embodied in human form. We accept that we are hurt, but we do not hold anyone accountable and guilty for that. You see, that is what happens. So then that shifts our dynamic with that specific relationship in the household. And it may appear a subtle shift, but it actually has very big ramifications. You see? And make no mistake, people are free to exit certain relationships where they feel there's a lack of love. Because this teaching says, do exactly that which you think and feel you should do. But knowing that no one is the doer, neither the other, nor yourself. And you are quite right. When it comes to sages, when it comes to the animal kingdom, when it comes to maybe a few of our friends, people in our own universe, we find this quality in them, which really touches our hearts, where you could say the sense of me is very thin. And in many cases, this also gets overlooked. We take it for granted, because we may want love from a specific person, not really seeing who else in our life is giving us love by just being themselves. It is very often the case, I have seen this, that we do not cherish the ones who truly love us, and we are running after someone else to love us. This person must love me. And if I don't get this love from this person, I am very upset.
This is really helpful, because I remember you advising me, you are free to quit. So I moved out for 3 months. And when I came back after 3 months, their behavior changed for like 1 week, but it was again back to the same. So, yeah. And your pointer really helps, that you don't have to convert the simple imprisonment into rigorous imprisonment by the psychological dialogues.
Yeah, that was, I think, Rameshji's one of his biggest pointers. You don't have to convert simple imprisonment to rigorous imprisonment. So we have to see what happens next. But you see, running away may not be the solution. Sometimes it is, sometimes it may not be. It's a case-to-case basis. But my understanding is that when any problem, like the one you have mentioned, is approached with these two key factors in mind, whatever happens is the will of God, and nobody truly does anything, it brings a sense of peace within the conflict. That has been my experience, and I do hope that is the experience of many who are drawn to this teaching, actually. It's like a soothing balm, you know? It's really like a soothing balm.
It would be good if these zooms are regular because, like the serum going in, it has a lasting period and then the dose needs to be given again. So.
This reminds me of this dose and medicines and all. My driver, this guy loves to take injections. I have not seen anyone so happy to take injections. So, you know, he'll have like one day he'll say, Saab, sar dukh raha hai, or you know, the stomach is upset. And I'll say, okay, take the day off or whatever it is. I'm going and seeing the doctor. Next morning, he's absolutely beaming and fine. I said, so soon you got cured? Injection le liya. He just anything. So I was wondering, even just 2 days ago, he was vomiting, puking. So I thought he has eaten something. And apparently he had got wet in the rains. And then he said, I'm going to the doctor. I said, you please go and take it easy. Next morning, yesterday morning, he was back in form. So I said, you're okay so fast? He said, injection lady. I said, which is this doctor who keeps giving you injections? He said, I insist he gives. He's not too keen on giving. So now whether that doctor gives an injection or placebo, I don't know. But injection is given, and this guy is back to normal. You know, ready to face the next day and its challenges with a smile. This is like two injections. Everything is God's will, and nobody truly does anything. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Is there someone else? Yes, Rahul.
Namaste, Gautam. Good morning.
Namaste.
Been
How are
so
you?
long. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Just continuing upon the previous questioner, it's nice for this that you started the Zoom again. I really missed you. It's like a booster shot, like you said.
You know, the whole thing with this is that firstly, it was raining so much in Mumbai for the last 1 week that our internet was giving trouble since 2 days. I didn't even know if this would happen. And then my team informed me that they have a problem with live stream connectivity with YouTube. So no one, bulk of the people watch this on YouTube, and that's not happening. So that's the technological challenges we face. And of course,
Right.
those who come home for satsang say they have no interest in YouTube and Zoom and all that. But it's good to
But for
be
people
back.
like us, it's like so. I mean, this is the only way we can connect with you.
Yes.
And of course, YouTube is there, but it doesn't still have the feeling of, being in a virtual room with you. The
Right.
best would be to be at your place in Mumbai, but this is the second best, actually.
So are you in you're in Germany or
Yeah,
somewhere?
I'm in Germany, Gautam. I was in India a couple of times, but somehow I really wanted to come to Mumbai or wherever you were going to give lectures, but it just didn't time out. This philosophy has really changed my life. And recently I was talking to my team lead about this philosophy, and I could see his jaw just dropping down. So then a thought just occurred to me, if everything is so destined and we are just, I mean, like a device through which things are happening. So isn't it like a puppet show where we are all these characters and, like just puppets? So where is the happiness in that? How to find happiness in that? Like, I have to be very honest, this thing has got a lot of peace in me. And people ask me, why are you not taking stress? I'm st they're stressed because I am not taking stress. And so I just like this thought occurred to me. Is this a fair thought that we are just like, as in Hindi they say, kathputliyan,
You
So.
see, there are 2 points here, Rahul. One is that, firstly, what do you feel? If you feel it makes sense to you, it appeals to you, that is what you are concerned with. Now, let's not forget one thing, that this concept of destiny, of being exactly the way God has made us, and so on and so forth. You see, the reason this is brought in the wisdom teachings is because we are so hardwired to believe that we are a product of our doing, including our conditioning and nature, And this teaching says, wait a minute, please question that, please look at that. So what it is doing is it is gradually eroding away at this hard shell of this is me. That is the function. So when what happens very often, for example, is people get lost between destiny and free will. Is there destiny? Is there free will? These are both polaric opposites in the realm of duality. You see, the idea is not that you swing from one end to the other. The idea is you take a fresh look at things. When you realize that the biggest events in your life were really not in your control, start looking at the smaller events and see this tapestry, see this gigantic jigsaw puzzle falling into place, which brings many people together for an event to transpire, and then know that you are just a small piece in the happening. So at one level, you may feel that actually it's true, I am feeling like a puppet. But does it mean I'm helpless? Now, it clearly says, in any situation, do that which you think and feel you should do, based on your nature, based on your conditioning, based on your genetics. You have to take an action. That is why I just read out one of Bhagwan's traits as observed by his devotee, that he was active. And Bhagwan himself, when he was questioned, why are you sitting in silence? You could be doing so much. His reply was, what makes you think I am not? You see, so this understanding may be that everyone in my life, in my workspace, in my family is ultimately a puppet. That is the understanding, playing their script like I am playing my script. But does it lead to despondency? No. In fact, it brings a tremendous relief to the equation that ultimately when I go to sleep at night, I know that there's a higher power which has played out, which is playing each and every actor in the movie of my life. And so I sleep with a peaceful mind because I am no longer seeing individuals. I am no longer seeing individuals hating me or loving me, doing this to me, doing that to me, and so on and so forth. That is why I become stress-free. Do I become lethargic? Do I become despondent? Do I say, what the hell, there's no point in doing anything? That is the ego walking in through the back door because now it feels I'll be the non-doer. You see, that is how the mischievous ego operates. That is how it is. So the knowing is there. There is a knowing that consciousness is functioning through everyone, precisely the way it is meant to. And yet I do precisely what I feel I should do. Imagine thinking all the pieces on the chessboard are moving themselves when we know they are not. But we assume in life, all the pieces on the chessboard of our life are moving themselves. Is that really, I mean, it may appear that way, but is it really so? Firstly, no one's breath is in their control. No one's breath is in their control.
Thank you, Gautam. Sometimes in the light of this philosophy, whenever I see people so attached to their roles, it's kind of funny.
It is because that is what is creating the suffering. Yet, yeah. The man of understanding will play his role in life. He will not reject it. He will not say, this is not for me. If a role has been assigned to him by the source, it will be played and it will probably be played extremely well because his thinking mind will not butt in all the time.
Yeah.
You see, that is what happens. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Ram, I can't hear you.
Oh, okay. Am I audible now?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Nice. Long time. Actually, today it's been exactly 1 year since that last year's question of Poonamji in during Zoom, and it was on July 18. That was also Sunday, and you told some of the same things. I remember. I can never forget that single video and that single question because it's so profound. It like pierces thoroughly. I wish that piercing becomes permanent, but yeah, that's also in the hands of nature and divine. So it's what we are living, what we realize is called the living dream of life. And today again, you mentioned that same thing.
I thought you're going to say that you spoke exactly what you said a year ago, so it's getting pretty boring.
No, absolutely not. It's absolutely not boring. We need that to get imprinted deep into the heart.
Yes,
then only it will reflect.
That is what my teacher would say, that the shell of the ego is so strong that it needs the constant hammering to break it, you know. Same thing, because he was asked so many times that for so many years you say the same thing day in and day out. Every morning you say the same thing, the same old story. And he said the shell of the ego needs constant hammering in most cases so that it breaks.
Right. Right. Yeah, even because the question itself is stemming from the standpoint of the individuality, the ego only.
Yes.
Even this question, even this sharing. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Hoping
Anything
to meet you.
You'd like to share?
No, hoping to meet you once again at your residence.
Hope so too.
When... yeah. Hope so too. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Ram.
Thank you.
You know, I must say, Ram Kumar reminds me of this. Friend of mine, I think we have an on-off relationship in that sense, because he's very hard to get astrologer, come face reader, come everything. He's like all rolled into one. And when it happens, we meet. When it doesn't happen, we don't. And so there are huge patches of time which go when we don't meet, and then suddenly we meet. The other day he had come home. And he told me, as an astrologer now, he said, do you know, we all worship Lord Ram, but technically he had the worst horoscope any man would want, losing the kingdom, going into exile for so many years, then the wife being kidnapped. He said, can you imagine the nightmare of a horoscope he must have had? And then he said, I use this example with people who are going through a lot of churn in their life and want a way out when they come to him for help. You know how it is, especially in India, there's a lot of reliance on all this. He says, I say that look at certain experiences in your life as a blessing, because without them, you would not learn. So that was quite cute, that Lord Ram's horoscope was probably not a good one from the human perspective. If he just saw all the pains, challenges, sufferings, and all that, who would want that, you see? And that is why Rameshji would say, thank God for your suffering. Thank God for your suffering. Knowing that it could have been infinitely more worse. Infinitely more worse. About 6 months ago, I was at a dinner. There was a lady there who, very sad story, that her husband, I think, slipped by the poolside and hit his head, and since that day has been a vegetable in a wheelchair. And I met up with someone who was part of that gathering, who heard the same story I heard. Met this person after maybe a couple of weeks. This person was complaining about various aspects of their life, the way the father treats him, the problem with the house help, the problem with the Mumbai airport and how long they take to clear immigration, how one cannot cross Marine Drive, one has to wait and wait till one gets a chance, blah, 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 blah. And I thought to myself, does this person really know what suffering is? How much of our life is full of complaining when it could be infinitely more worse than what it is? All right, I'm going to change my view so I can see all of you for a couple of minutes, and then we can do what we have scheduled to do this Sunday. It's the day of the sun, the only visible God, visible Brahman. I will hopefully see some of you all in Pune next weekend, and in South India in August, maybe. In Kashmir, they have a beautiful saying. What was it? I was going to the airport and the flight, I think, was almost cancelled. And it was a big question mark coming back to Mumbai, and we didn't know what to do. And then we reached the airport, got dropped off. Then there was this, it may be cancelled, may not be cancelled. And it was pretty late in the evening. So I called up the driver and I said, will you be available? Because we might be stranded and the airport is quite far from town. And he said, I'll be available in Hindi, he said it. But he said, aap ek cheez karo, Allah ke hawale kar do. Just whatever it is, surrender it to God. I said, yes, yes, that I know, but you are quite right. That it is their living experience with everything, you see. If I tell him, pick me up at so-and-so time, he'll say, main aunga, inshallah, I'll come, God willing. We have to go to meet Dr. Sahib, we'll go, inshallah, if it is the will of God. There was a famous cartoon strip, I forget which one, where it is said, life is hard. And the other person says, compared to what?